Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets, and I'm here with Angela Bachman today.
It's always good to be here with you, Brittany, and you guys can find us online at theunionedge.com, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you want. We're there.
And a quick thank you to PFT Local 400, the teachers here in Pittsburgh, and the Fairfax Education Association for all of your support. We really appreciate it.
And joining us right now, we have Buck Gino from Work in Progress Radio. Hey, Buck, what's going on today?
It's good to be with you, ladies. Always a pleasure.
Always great to have you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the snow. It's been absolutely wonderful.
It's pretty.
We tried to send it your way, but how much did you really get? Or is it?
It's not sticking.
No.
It's just floating around in the air.
It's
kind of nice.
Yeah.
It's just enough to annoy you.
Uh-huh.
Especially when you already put your winter jacket away because, you know, it's been in like the 60s.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's got to be interesting driving around there when it gets icy because, you know, all the hills and everything and... You know, I see you got a lot of concrete backstops on the roads and stuff. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and some of those hilly roads are still brick roads, too, so that's real fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that being said, so. So is every current events has kind of taken a little shake-up here in the last couple of days, and, you know, we've Trump has decided to take Syria to task a little bit for their, you know, anti-human rights. There's no words to explain what they do to young people, but the bigger part of it is, too, that there's over, 5 million refugees? A lot of those children, too. So, you know, that's another thing that we should be thinking about, not just about what happens in day by day, but we have children and people dying every day through that regime. So
yeah,
it's a tough call, and who knows? So. And I saw something else that was kind of interesting, too. I saw just a couple of minutes ago, I saw a report that there's a Russian warship entering the Mediterranean. So this could get, you know, has a little bit of an excitement to what's to that, too. So.
Well, we'll just have to watch and wait and see, I guess.
Yeah. It's those are the toughest things as Americans that we go through because it puts a lot of stress on us as Americans and our loved ones serving in the military, and it puts a lot of stress on our legislators to try to do the right thing. So all we can do is keep saying our prayers, and hopefully that ends up peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And certainly nothing compared to the stress the Syrians are going through right now as they are fighting for their lives. But. Let's talk about the Supreme Court confirmation that just happened.
Mm. Yeah, but you know, that's going to have like far-reaching, impact on how the whole sense of our government is run from now on. It's going to change the whole. You know, it will be the 50% plus one situation in the Senate. You know, we could argue back and forth whether that's a good idea, but my feeling on that is that if you are a competent judge that is going to be appointed to the Supreme Court, then you should have no problem getting 60 votes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I can't remember, I guess, unless I'm... Maybe you can, or maybe Charles thought about this, but I don't remember the last time one did not receive 60 votes.
Well, that's because they just changed the rules. Up until now, you had to have 60 votes. So, yeah, all of them.
Right. What I mean by that is if you're competent and you should be able to, get both sides of at least some of the other side to vote for. But I think the bigger picture of this is that, you know, the Republicans run around and talk about how, this and that. But, you know, it was about a year after that they left Judge Garland out there hanging without even a hearing. And this guy was a competent judge, too.
Yeah, that whole thing was, it was so disappointing. I mean, there is no reason in the world why Judge Garland should not, or should have been kicked out essentially of this whole running because of there was plenty of time, and that was just a matter of they had a big stalemate over basically trying to just assert authority and power.
Right. Well, at least have a hearing. I mean, if you don't confirm him, you don't confirm him.
Yeah.
But there's no reason to disallow a hearing at all. That's pretty ridiculous. But, yeah, politics are... To say politics are polarized is, like, the biggest understatement ever. I don't even know what to do with this.
Well, there's an old saying, right, that says, you know, what goes around comes around.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what they've done now is they've basically opened the door. And, you know, you look at the Senate is you know, almost as close as you can get, Republicans to Democrats. And then all it would take is just a couple of seats to flip, and then the shoe would be on the other foot.
It's kind of like opening Pandora's box at this point.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of run like a parliament.
Yeah,
now.
But I mean, I feel like there's also that element of like if you're gonna go with the what goes around comes around thing, you know, the Democrats did the same thing about Obama's nominees. You know, for cabinet positions, right? Isn't that what opened this box completely?
Basically, what they did is in 2013, they basically did this for, it was not cabinet, but federal judgeships.
Okay, yeah. Sorry about that.
And so that you're absolutely right. And but some would argue this is in a lot of ways quite a bit different. You're talking about a Supreme Court justice as to any number of federal judges. But you're right, and that goes back to we've had all these years of basically, you know, you push and then we push harder and then you push again and we push harder yet. And there hasn't been any willingness of any of the bodies, really, Senate or the Congress, the House, probably more the House, to a willingness to work together to get anything done. I mean, they spend all their time. I mean, this really started, you know, I didn't really notice it so much with George Bush in office, even though it was there. It's really started with, you know, like I said, with Barack Obama, where they were just so devastated that this guy was elected president. And, you know, and it was 8 years, basically, of just trying to basically cut down or delegitimize his presidency from day one. And that's where you find people, you know, even from the left, even myself, is being pretty bitter about that.
Yeah, I mean, for myself, my opinion of this is, I mean, whenever George Bush was the president, I was too young of a kid to really understand,
sure,
like, what was going on. And then when President Obama was elected, that was, I still wasn't really super into politics, but I was like learning a little bit more about it in school and stuff like that. So it was like, it wasn't such like a foreign concept, and I had a much better grasp about how things are working and what happens than when I did when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But in since then, I've still learned tenfold further. I mean, the early Obama years are still kind of like hazy for me. Like, I didn't really pay too much attention because it's like, so I was still like a kid, kind of, sort of.
Sure.
So it just wasn't like my focus of what I was doing and where I was in my life. Now, looking back on that, I'm like, oh my God, like this is absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've really only paid attention to probably about the last 4 years of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just blows my mind that we have reduced ourselves to this point and how much time and money and resources we've literally wasted on this system that has just been a hamster just running in circles on a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are so many better things we could have done in society, just period, across the board.
Well, ladies, how do you do that then? What is it that, I mean, I'm not trying to put you in a box, but how is it that, because what you're talking is going to be what I call, you know, your generation's job, basically, and to basically change the system to how does that system change? What do you do? Would it be, what do you think, maybe a third party? Is it the two-party system becomes so broken that we can never fix it?
I think some of it is, and I don't necessarily have an answer for this, because that's the other problem. The other part of this problem is I've sat here, and we down here, just because it's part of the job, discussed this to such lengths, and we all, to put that out there, do not sit on the same page with this stuff. I mean, we might, you know, we have a united front. We all, in concept and theory, for the most part, we have our parallels and like how we all get along and how we all agree. But we all do have different voices of opinion, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I don't necessarily have a good answer for that, but it is something I've thought about. And something that I personally kind of feel is that a lot of the younger generation currently, just because of the nature of what we've grown up with in the Obama era, have become so disenfranchised because we feel like it doesn't matter what we do. Nobody wants to listen to us, and they don't care. So then we feel like what we say does not matter. And though it's slowly changing, and especially now that Trump has been elected, I feel like a lot of people have become very invigorated to try and change this because it's now officially gotten to this point. But up until this point, I kind of feel like we've been stuck on the back burner, and we feel a little bit disenfranchised. So we've kind of just, like, people have disengaged.
Well, you know, and that's usually what happens is because when you, and I can remember back in the day, if you will, if I could use that term, is that, you know, when you're so busy, basically, you know, with your life, whether it's your job or your family or raising a family or getting ready to raise a family or whatever it is, you know, a lot of this stuff kind of just whisks by us awful fast. But what happens is that when you get and you ladies are probably in a good position because it's become apparent to you through what you do for your work that what's going on. So you're even though you probably didn't like the idea, you're really getting a pretty sound education. And what I mean by don't like it is because nobody really likes to talk politics. Everybody thinks that there's got to be better things to do in life, and that is the thing that's kind of changing that I see. And we're starting to have more and more discussion about the ramifications of what we do in the voting booth.
Yeah.
And it's not just about social issues anymore.
Yeah, exactly. We got to take a short break, but let's come back to this, and we'll talk soon. I'm Angela Bachman here with Brock Gino and Brittany Sheets, and you're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
A majority of subcontracted workers at Philadelphia International Airport now have union representation. This week, nearly 1,400 baggage handlers, wheelchair agents, sky caps, and other workers for Prime Flight and Prospect Air Services officially joined Local 32BJ of the Service Employees International Union. Gabe Morgan, union vice president, calls it the latest victory in an ongoing campaign to organize airport service workers across the country.
These workers have fought for the past 4 years, first to take their wages from, in some cases, as low as $5 an hour to $12 an hour. And they've been continuing that fight to try and obtain rights on the job.
He says 32BJ has organized 10,000 airport workers in New York and is organizing at airports in Boston, Florida, and Washington, D.C. Onitha McKnight is a wheelchair agent at the Philadelphia airport, often one of the lowest paying jobs because the company says they're allowed to collect tips. She says most of the people they serve don't know they could offer tips, and the workers aren't allowed to ask for them. She feels union membership will be an improvement.
Going forward, we have a say in what's happening with our lives, what's happening with our pay and our working condition. We can actually do something about it.
With a poverty rate nearly twice the national average, Philadelphia is the largest big city for deep poverty in the nation. Airport service jobs were once good-paying union jobs, but 30 years ago, airlines switched to low-bid, non-union contractors. Morgan says now unionized workers are bringing good jobs back to Philadelphia.
We'll be sitting down with a really huge group of workers to bargain with multiple employers to try and turn what really has been a concentrated set of poverty jobs in Philadelphia into living wage jobs.
32BJ represents 163,000 service workers in 11 states and Washington, D.C., For Keystone State News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Hey, this is Charles Showalter, host of the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I want to talk to you about an organization I'm proud to be part of, the Union Veterans Council. My friend, Will Fisher, runs the program. Will, he's a Marine and a member of the Painters Union. Will and the Veterans Council bring folks together and advocate for issues that are most important for veterans, especially the need for good jobs and a strong, fully funded, fully staffed Veterans Administration. Additionally, the Union Veterans Council works to remind folks that attacks on workers are attacks on veterans. Veterans and workers are one and the same. When vets like myself get out of the service, they're looking for a good family-supporting job. That's a union job, and the Union Veterans Council is the tip of the spear in the lead for these fights. In short, the Union Veterans Council stands for a better life and fights for those who have fought for us. You can learn more about the Union Veterans Council at www.unionveterans.org. That's unionveterans.org.
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard, so you don't need to start foraging wild berries.
I was skeptical, but these are actually pretty good.
You don't need to sell your soul to the devil.
$15 is the best I can do.
You just need FeedThePig.org. Don't get left behind. Get tips and tools at FeedThePig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
The Sheet Metal Workers Local 12, reminding you that sheet metal is vital to technology and manufacturing in nearly every industry known to man. Sheet metal workers gain knowledge and skills in all aspects of sheet metal manufacture and fabrication, leading to a variety of career opportunities. The Sheet Metal Workers Local 12 is now accepting applications for apprentices. Requirements include a high school diploma or GED and a Pennsylvania driver's license. More information can be obtained online at smlocal12.org. That's smlocal12.org.
Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman. I'm here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us. And a special thank you to the United Mine Workers of America and the Steelworkers International Union, the USW, for all of their support. We really appreciate it.
And back with us, we have Buck Gino from Work in Progress Radio. Buck, you've been good for dropping heavy things on us today, but we like the conversation. It's good.
Well, you know, it's funny. I would like to spend a little time. You talked about the steelworkers, and since we have the leader of the Chinese government in the United States talking to Mr. Trump, you know, one of the things that we've kind of forgotten about, and you don't hear Mr. Trump say this, but, you know, China really produce half of the world's steel supply. And the fact of the matter is it's basically subsidized by their government to do that. So they're able to basically flood America with cheap steel. And they fix prices doing that, and they take jobs away from those very same steel workers that you're talking about. As a matter of fact, you know, we've had a downturn here because obviously China produces half of it, and we've had about 14,000 hardworking Americans have been laid off from the steel industry here lately, and you know, they're facing billions in losses. So it's really necessary for us to level the playing field, and I don't know if you're going to hear Mr. Trump talk about this much, but you know, he went around during the time when he was campaigning about how he was going to get rid of all these trade agreements, get rid of all these bad things, so to speak, that was happening to the American workers because of our so-called agreements with these foreign governments. It's amazing that, you know, that we don't pay attention more to this. Like I said, this would be a good discussion, I think, for him to have with China. And, you know, he's already kind of waffled on, you know, the NAFTA. He said, instead of completely basically just throwing it all away like he made all these promises to the workers, now they only just talk about tweaking it. So these are things that we should pay attention to. And, you know, when you talk about cheap steel, that really basically affects all the industries in such a way. When you talk about cheap steels, they dump everything from tin cans into the melting pots and make all this stuff. And you know, this is the kind of stuff that we're using. You know, and no matter what he says about all these American-made products, you look at some of these pipelines and stuff we're being built is being built with this type of steel, and to me, that's dangerous. And
yeah.
So this is one of the things that I really believe that he should have a discussion with China about is, you know, not many governments, you know, subsidize steel and all the things that we make. And it's time that him and Congress finally did something about it. Now, whether they will or not, or they just try to hide it, sweep some leaves over it and leave it alone, hoping nobody will figure it out. But it's really, really important to the working class people, especially the steel workers in this country. You know, they can compete with anybody in the world here. We know that. But it's hard to compete with someone
field.
Who basically has cut the price in half and by their government. It's hard to compete.
And
right.
Then the effects that this has on the different towns is very evident, especially here in Western Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
All around us in Ohio, in West Virginia, in our part of Pennsylvania, this whole little circle over here is a bunch of just old steel towns. There's
yeah.
a couple steel mills still up, but I mean, even still, like whenever the towns that these current mills are in, if that mill goes down, that town goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then there's also this added layer of, you know, they don't have the standards there that we have here. So, again, if you want to talk about building a pipeline that's carrying fuel that everyone is worried about accidents that will damage the environment, and you're going to pump it through crappy steel, what do you think is going to happen?
Which, you know, in turn...
You look at all these oil spills and things like that. Or there's, you know, just look at, you know, we had one here a few years ago in Michigan on the Kalamazoo River, and it was a company called Enbridge. And, you know, we got these pipelines that are running underneath the Lake Michigan, underneath the Mackinac Bridge to the Upper Peninsula, and we already know those are in bad shape. And what's going to happen if they're pumping all that oil into the Great Lakes? And so that's the kind of thing that we have to pay attention to, and you know, and I believe that these are the kind of things that, you know, that Mr. Trump and his team are going to, like I said, sweep it under the rug, and hopefully that nobody pays attention. But it's really, really affects a lot of people, and it's the very same people that voted for Mr. Trump.
Yeah.
Well, in turn, in this also, another element of this that needs to be thought about is the fact that, yes, there is a quality issue with some of this other steel coming into the country and the dumping that they've been doing. Well, you're taking that bad steel, building a pipeline running through the middle of the country that is already in question of endangering just the people around it and the environment. Well, now you're giving a unreliable product that is not only taking jobs away from Americans to build said pipeline, but is not necessarily as secure as steel we produce in our own country to build this, impacting millions of people throughout the country and huge chunks of the environment and the ecosystem.
And the fact of the matter is, when Donald Trump was doing his business, he was the biggest user of Chinese steel. You know,
one more layer of hypocrisy.
You know, and it's just amazing, like I said, how all these things are going on around us, and we can't lose focus because this means a lot of jobs to an industry that is, as you said, are already decimated by the fact that they're able to subsidize the steel industry and then also basically cut the price in half. And it's really, 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 really hard to compete. Especially, you know, and here's the corporations. They're saying, oh, yeah, let's buy all this cheap steel. And buy the cheap steel, and then in the end, when we build our building, we'll just price it just like it was not given to us at a half price. And so that's the bigger thing. And the working men and women are the ones that end up paying the bill. So
yeah, this whole thing is just a very unfortunate mess that I wish more people would actually take a minute to just kind of like look at and then look at the repercussions of, because I don't think a lot of people necessarily get it.
No.
Yeah, you know, we were talking to Frank Emspeck from Workers Independent News yesterday, and he called him a bait and switch president. And I thought that was really appropriate, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. And you don't think that, even though he was doing kind of a, you know, something that fell right into his little a lap here, was exactly what went on here.
His greasy little hands.
In the last couple days. And so, like I said, we can't be looked at like we're looking past this. We have to keep up the pressure. We have to talk about the things that are important to us, and most importantly, talk about what's important to the American worker, so that they are able to make a decent living and retire with dignity and have good health care, and being able to take care of their families.
And on that note, we are out of time, and we've got to run. But real quick, who's coming on with you at 2:30?
We have John Roering. He's with the Michigan Information and Research Service. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Michigan as far as the $300 million cut that Mr. Trump is proposing to the Great Lakes cleanup.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to hearing from that. And on that note, we've got to run, guys. That was Buck Genome of Work in Progress Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman, and you've been listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.